Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host, Felicity Sednell-Reed, and our guest this week, Peter Lockyer. Each week at this time, we visit with authors, editors, publishers, sometimes storytellers or filmmakers who have regional or local connections. We hope to find out a little bit about their lives, perhaps ask them what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read some of their work for us. Today, we're very pleased to have Peter Lockyer join us. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you very much for being here.
Peter Lockyer worked as a journalist for many years in both Europe and all over Canada. He wrote numerous magazine articles and made countless video productions for CBC and as an independent producer. He also served as a senior communications officer for several federal cabinet ministers, government departments, and the House of Commons committees. He has worked as a media trainer and still does for the Canadian military. In 2000, he returned to his hometown of Picton and became involved in efforts to restore a large Victorian cemetery in the center of town. In order to capture the community's attention and to raise funds, he developed the very successful History Moments series, which are played now on several TV stations, including Chex in Peterborough, CKWS in Kingston, TV Kojiko, and in several theatres in the area, as well as online at the websites of sponsors and partners. Peter is a chair of the Prince Edward County Heritage Advisory Committee and a member of the Prince Edward County's 225th Anniversary Committee to be celebrated this year. You're deeply involved in your home community and the projects you've worked on since your return, but what brought you back after an exciting career which took you to Europe and across Canada?
Well, I would say I'm typical of many people from small communities like Coburg and Prince Edward County in the sense that we export. Our greatest export continues to be our youth, and you have to go away to go to university and find work. But if you're lucky, like I was, you get to come back after 35 or 40 years. So my hometown of Picton was always my hometown, and no other place was actually home like that place was. I always wanted to come back. I did get to travel extensively, and I was very lucky in my career. But when I came back, what prompted me was really aging parents. My dad was in actually the final months of his life, and so I'd always wanted to come back, and if ever there was a time to come back, it was then, and I'm very glad I did, and we got to spend some extra time together. And then after that, I got involved with a bunch of things that my dad was involved in. My brother and I divvied up all the things he had done in the community. He was a great musician. He was involved in everything. And we couldn't even begin to take on everything he was involved in, even with the two of us working at it. So I took on an old cemetery, which was one of the things that he was involved in. And it's a beautiful Victorian cemetery smack dab in the middle of Picton. It wasn't always that way. That was one time in the outskirts of Picton. And that has led me, that's been very formative in my life, because in order to raise funds for the cemetery, we decided we needed to tell stories from the cemetery, and we got into doing a whole bunch of things from walking tours to lectures to the History Moments series that you mentioned.
How has your previous experience played into this present occupation?
Well, I think you've probably talked to lots of authors and playwrights and filmmakers before on this show. And one of the things they would all say is that the history of Eastern Ontario is so rich, because at one time we were really at the epicenter of Confederation. So we were the principal economic power, the principal driving political power, the social and cultural power behind the country that became Canada. And in its early years, this was the center of it. So there are many stories of early settlement or founding industries or prominent events or significant people who have shaped not only the history of places like Coburg and Picton and all the other places in between, but they're part of the story of Canada as well. So any journalist is going to say, wow, these are to die for stories, and they need to be told, and they might wonder, why aren't they being told on a sustained basis? The other thing that registered with me, though, is I got to go to lots of places in the world. I was documenting Canada's relief and development efforts. So often I was documenting small credit unions and co-ops, micro-enterprises, village banks, and things like that. And I was just blown away by the power of people when they come together to do things. They pool limited resources and the human capital and their ideas, and they were doing all kinds of interesting things. So to me, it was about, okay, in other places, people are pooling their resources and doing great things, and they're often retailing their history. They are making a business out of that. So if you go to some places, they're not only selling you, you know, a tour, but they're selling you a picture of you on the tour, and then you can have all kinds of souvenir items, and you can go to dinner someplace else, and pretty soon they take a $10 tour and make it into a $200 experience, which I gladly paid for. I had such a great time. So I, in observing what other people are doing in their communities, and many of these communities are impelled to do this because they were dying. You know, their industry that they had at one time just wasn't there anymore. The world had changed and left them behind. So what they were doing was seizing on an asset that's in every community. It's kind of hidden in the collections of museums and cemeteries and archives and libraries and heritage properties that we have, but it's there. So they were telling the stories of this history, and I found it endlessly fascinating, and I was also impressed by the fact that they had made an economy out of it, a heritage economy. So they were making money, which in turn supported that infrastructure. And the final thing then was my own practical experience with the cemetery, as I was mentioning, is that how do you raise money for a cemetery? It's not really top of mind with most people, and it's not really a top municipal priority either. But nonetheless, these are important properties. I think we owe, as a sign of respect to the people that are buried there, we owe them something to tell their stories and remember them always, and also to be respectful and dignified about how the property is maintained. So cemeteries are wonderful places. They just don't come with any money. So you have this very practical problem. So one of the things we did, we just started to say, well, could we tell stories? I have that storytelling capability. So we started the walking tours, we started a lecture series, and then we got into these history moments, which are little highly produced 2-minute stories from the cemetery and other places, and they are endlessly fascinating. But the cemetery in itself was the source of so many of the stories, because it's about a time, you know, and a town, and how they celebrated both life and death. It was located on the outskirts of town, because it had to be close enough that you could get there with a hearse and wagon, team of horses. Yes, but far enough away because they were a little suspicious about about death and the causes of death. So Glenwood was on the outskirts of town. It's now smack dab in the center of the town. It's a Victorian cemetery. It's really 62 acres of rolling hills and winding roads and tall, mature stands of trees with 3 historic buildings on it. It has several prominent Canadians there. One is a temperance pioneer, Letitia Humans, who actually came from Cobourg in the 1840s to take a teaching job in Prince Edward County. And she saw so many young children come to school who were barefoot or poorly clothed or poorly fed. And that's because Dad was drinking away his wages at the 7 taverns that were on our main street at the time. And she became very obsessed about that and upset, so she started a temperance movement to try to ban alcohol. She wasn't entirely successful at that, but she tried nonetheless, and I really admire her. She was really quite a remarkable woman who spoke up at a time when women really didn't speak up. The other person that's there is another Canadian who started an industry that was at one time everything to Prince Edward County. That was the canning industry. And we were once the center of it. About 1/3 of all the canned tomatoes and corn produced in Canada from the 1880s up until the late 1950s was produced out of Prince Edward County. So it was a big deal. It was everything to the economy of the place. And the guy that started it was a guy named Wellington Bolter. So he is also known as the founder of the canning industry in Canada, and he's buried at Glenwood. Yeah. So there are lots of people, lots of events. We even have a...
So how did you choose the ones that you were going to tell the stories about?
Well, they kind of choose me, I think. You know, I just say, wow, I didn't know that. And I think that's one of the trademarks of our little series, is just that lots of times when they play before movies at the local theater in Picton, the Regent Theater itself, a historic building. And I think most people, you know, watch them and say, gee, I've lived here 25 years and I didn't know that. So yeah. It's endless, really.
Okay, so tell us
moment.
Kind of story.
Well, we were in 2000 when I started to get involved in some of the things my dad had been involved in, one being the Glenwood Cemetery. I really sort of thought that it would be about we'd paint and we'd sort of trim up the grass and plant some flowers, and it really turned out to be much more than that because the cemetery hadn't had any money put into it in 60 years. So one of the things we did was start to trim back overgrown sections. And in every cemetery, there's a place called Pauper's Field or Potter's Field. And this is really not the prime real estate in the cemetery. So it goes to families who are less fortunate. And so we started clearing this out, and we came across this sunken grave. And it had a very crude little stone. It looks like somebody did that themselves just with a chisel and a hammer. And it says, G. Lauder, unjustly hanged, 1884.
Ooh, there's a story.
So it is a great story. In 1884, in June of 1884, we had a trial in Picton at the courthouse, which was the trial of two men who were accused of attempted robbery and a botched murder in Bloomfield, in a house that still stands on the outskirts of Bloomfield. What they had tried to do, or somebody did at least, because we don't think it was these guys that we hanged, they had showed up one night around Christmas night, and the whole thing was, we're going to rob this Quaker family who had been paid for their hops crop, $550 in 1883, a lot of money. And the thinking was, well, Quakers won't fight back, they're pacifists, so what could be easier than this gig? That didn't turn out that way. I think just by fright and fear, somehow somebody, a shot was fired and one person died in the Quaker household. So we capture a bunch of guys because there are tracks in the snow that sort of lead to their homes. And in May of 1884, they have their trial. These two men always proclaim their innocence, but the town was really worked up. They were out for blood, which can often happen, you know, a lot of emotions running. And at that time, the crowd in the courtroom was so boisterous and so emotional that they sort of intimidated the 12 men on the jury. There wasn't any conviction other than guilty that was going to be acceptable here. So they did have that, but they recommended clemency. The problem with that is there was no clemency at the time. So you were either guilty or not guilty, and if you were guilty, you had to hang. So in June of 1884, we actually hanged these two men, and one was buried at the courthouse, which was the custom at the time, and the other, George, who people widely felt had nothing to do with this. And again, both men left these heartfelt letters to their family about saying they didn't do this. But George ended up at Glenwood Cemetery, and it's still disputed whether he's there or not, but we definitely have this sunken grave and we have this old stone. And I think it's such a statement that a community would say at that time, we're going to bury a convicted murderer on consecrated grounds because we don't think we did the right thing. And after that, it was very hard to get a conviction on a murder charge in Prince Edward County because we didn't want to make that mistake again.
Well, that is a story.
It is a story.
We'll have to hear a few more of them, but first we must take a short break.